If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret, searching for the sound. This is the Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Wanted to let you know that the Sound Stream is now available exclusively on the Sound app. You can now listen 24/7 to a music stream featuring jam bands and more, much more. So not just what you'd expect, but a few surprises along the way too. Curated by the Sound Media Team, the stream offers up your favorite songs by your favorite bands and artists, both live and in the studio. We'll also be adding specialty programming and much more. So get it today and listen wherever you want for free. Get the app for iOS and Android by searching for The Sound Podcast and Stream or at app.thesoundmedia.com. Just hit the orange button, press play, and boogie on. The show starts now.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Sometimes from Regen Hour and folks from a compilation you need to hear and get called Extended Release. You can at regenhour.com. Don't wait, do it now, and I'll wait. Truth is, we've become really good friends with Reed over the years and are in awe of how he is able to bring musicians together to share in the love of the jam, the songs, mostly his songs, and good times. First, I want to be clear, I was a fan of Strange Folk and Assembly of Dust and his solo work, and continue to be. But he is a really solid dude who has on several occasions taken time out of his life to offer some solid advice. And we can't thank him enough for it. So it was with great pleasure that we welcomed him to chat about Regen Hour and Folk's extended release and his upcoming tour, if for no other reason than to get the pronunciation of his name correct. Just joking, the guy is a treat. Our conversation started when I asked about the nuts and bolts of how he assembled a compilation of tunes from three venues for our delight and what motivated it.
You know, it was sort of an extension of Conspire to Smile. I put that record together. I had an intention, which was largely personally motivated, which is just kind of feeling hopeless and overwhelmed by the state of affairs. And feeling like I needed to do something to contribute. And I don't know if it was the right formula or not, but my intention was to lead with, you know, community with possibility and collaboration and sort of lead through example. And so that was a huge undertaking. It was just musically and logistically and emotionally, and then by way of sort of furthering, it just was a natural extension. You know, you throw something out into the universe and you see where it goes, and it just felt obvious to go and play some shows around it. And the shows were really, really cool because, well, for me, just like on a more mundane level, it was just cool to play with different guys and like have my songs just kind of like blown apart and reimagined. And I don't know, maybe some people would feel threatened by that. I felt like it was like a ray of sunshine, you know. And then you know, like to go more to the, you know, sublime, it was like it really was actualizing what I was talking about. It was a group of guys who came together, who, you know, we all knew each other from different contexts with different degrees of intimacy, but who, you know, found one another in this Vulcan mind meld. And it was cool. And the playing was like, you know, I was scared, actually. Like, you know, it's scary enough to get up on stage in front of people and hang your heart out, but to do it with a group of guys that have never played together before and who really didn't have the time to properly rehearse is kind of like, you know, daunting. And it worked. And I was really kind of, you know, not always. We definitely stammered and stuttered a little bit, but by and large, certainly emotionally it worked and musically it worked. And I wanted to, I don't know, you know, make it that accessible for people because it's kind of buried. The shows are buried on archive and on Nugs, and just, you know, pull it from the clutter in the background forward. So it's kind of a nice way of summarizing, hey, here's what it is. And then also to sort of, you know, set up this next run.
So there are several things that I find fascinating about this project. Of the things that I find most amazing is the musicians that you've been able to assemble from all corners of the jam band and music world. You know, Jason Crosby and Melvin Seals and Lebo are West Coast guys for the most part now, but then there's Metzger and there's Yehuba, who's on this side of the continent, and everybody in between. Like, your Rolodex must be insane, or whatever you use to keep track of all the, I guess it would be your iPhone contacts at this point, but it must be insane.
Yeah. It's, you know, I've been at it a long time, And moving to the West Coast kind of was like putting another foot down, you know, like if I was standing on one leg all those years. And it, you know, in the, I may be overstating it, but there's, you know, I think I probably know more musicians here than I did on the East Coast, because it's sort of mecca for the style of music that I play. And it's been really neat to sort of be embraced by that community. And then, yeah, to bridge the two is, like you say, you know, again, on a pedestrian side, it's fun.
Yes,
and then
yeah.
There's something sublime about it, you know?
Right.
Just like the connected arc.
Is it weird playing on stage and looking over and seeing somebody who is not just a terrific musician, but must have been a hero during his Jerry Garcia band days? Like, to look over and see that you're sharing the stage with somebody like Melvin Seals, that's a big deal, right? Like, talk about the difference between sublime there and just the pedantic of being on stage with Melvin Seals.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm a fanboy for sure. And so, yeah, there were moments like playing Midnight Moonlight with Melvin, and it was like, it just felt like an outer body experience. And then to have him, you know, rip over a couple of my tunes, it was like, it was, you know, there was the sort of fanboy component and the holy cow. And then there was the, you know, the musical chemistry, and like, he's such a, he's such a light person, you know, and such a, like, really just like a approachable guy and a big heart. And he just, you know, there's no ego. And so what was cool, I think, with all these guys was they approached it. Scott Metzger said it on your show, like, we all came in sort of respecting the music and one another, and Melvin didn't like pull out of the pack. He leaned into it the same way, and it just felt really comfortable, and that's what made it special.
I'm glad that you mentioned that there are original songs from you on this tour, but also on this compilation, but then there are covers. How do you decide, you know, what songs you're going to cover and what songs are going to be Reed originals, whether they're from Assembly or from Strange Folk or just solo material? How do you decide, A, what songs you're going to play, and then B, what songs are going to make a compilation of this magnitude?
Yeah. I mean, playing for covers, it's funny. I think I under-index in covers, and for Conspire to Smile, I'm not sure exactly why I chose to do covers. I think my hope was that the songs themselves and the message were bigger than I was, and that if I tried to write a bunch of songs, people would have to learn them and understand the words, as opposed to, you know, playing Let Love Rule or All You Need Is Love. It sort of speaks for itself. So that was part of Conspire to Smile. In general, picking covers for me, there's some songs that I just love. There's also, like, I don't know, stylistically and emotionally, whether or not I think I can pull it off. Like, I've done a couple Led Zeppelin covers that I regret.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like the emotional and musical range. And there's a place for me where it feels legit. And then there's one where you just feel like an imposter. So, I mean, right. Jerry Garcia, you know, is sort of like the epicenter of our conversation, and he did a great job of curating what he played. They became, you know, part of him, and vice versa. And that's my hope when I pick a cover. And like I said, there's probably, I can think of half a dozen where I was like, oof, wish I hadn't tried that one.
No, I don't, that's not fair. I think that, you know, everything is, for me, it's as much about the performance and the level of authenticity to the performance that's as important as nailing the song necessarily. That's just my opinion.
But I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like, there's some that just don't feel authentic, and like, I can't do Led Zeppelin authentically.
Right.
I just can't. So that's really what comes down to, is can it be authentic? And then in terms of, for the shows themselves, I prefer to play original material. It's like, that's part of the joy for me. It's a form of self-expression. And then peppering in the covers is like, it's fun. It's like, sorbet or dessert for us, the musicians, and for the fans. I mean, I guess it depends, I think these shows probably the audience was probably more diverse, right? Because there were people coming to see Scott Metzger or Crosby or whatever. And so those covers are important because they're like common ground, it's like something that you can feel confident in. And I think that's partly like, my songs are not anywhere, and the music I play, isn't anywhere near as challenging as Phish, but I share their ethos just in that I want, I want people to come and get the main chorus and not just live off popcorn.
Right. Right. And that certainly comes through, right? Like Sideways Train, this live version is you, like it's who you are. And it's such a great performance on this collection, because it's one of your tunes, and it takes so many twists and turns that, the record version, the original version, doesn't take. I mean, you're able to expand what you're doing in the live situation and playing with all these people that you don't necessarily get the chance to do when you're just playing them the way you had originally intended, right?
Yeah, and I never, with the exception of a few that don't have solo spots, I never intended them to play them live, like the record. I just don't think it's interesting, right, for me personally or for the audience. But what was cool is what you're saying is like, it was a trust fall kind of, because you're like, I don't know where this is going to go. And what was neat is after just a few songs, it was clear that we could trust each other. If maybe even zero, there was just like this sense that it was going to work. And it did. Like, it just did. Like, I remember we took the stage and I was kind of like, it was like being in a rocket ship that you weren't sure whether it was going to just like go sideways and run into a building. And all of a sudden it elevated and I was like, thank you, gods of music.
When you approach somebody like Lebo and say, all right, well, I want you to be part of this experience, does he say, oh, well, we got to do I Want to Feel It because we're going to have all these cool players? Or is it a matter of you choosing that song and you seeking Lebo out? I mean, that's an ALO song, right?
Yeah. For me, like, I know all these guys. So
right.
I wasn't, they weren't mercenaries. It was, and I think that's part of what made it, powerful and special for me personally. So, there was conversations that were like, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? And so it was sort of like a mutual, decision, right? I wasn't strong arming anybody into it. And then in terms of playing I Want to Feel It, I wanted to give, they were supporting me in my songs and I wanted to offer the same. So I just kind of said, it'd be nice if you guys each love a song, why don't you send what you want to. And I think, for Lebo, I Want to Feel It, like, it's like a go-to for him. It's one of his greatest hits. So it's an obvious one. And it was cool. I think he experienced the same thing. It was cool for him to, have Metzger exploding it, and it's neat.
It's always good to have Metzger around, right? I mean, it just adds another element that is, otherworldly. I mean, that guy is just so talented. It's, I mean, they're all, everybody. Sorry?
He is. Yeah, certainly. He just he has a really interesting musical palette. And but that was something that was really cool about Lebo and Metzger is like sometimes it's tough when there's two, you know, lead guitarists because there's either ego or there's insecurity or there's just uncertainty as to who should be doing what.
Right.
And they just kind of effortlessly went back and forth. And they have like yin and yang styles, you know? And so it was like, it wasn't redundant, you know, it was the opposite. It was like accretive to have the two of them playing together. And that's part of, I think, really what makes these songs interesting to me is to hear that interplay and to hear like the whole band sort of find each other in the music. And you have to remember, we hadn't played together, right? So they're like, we're literally like learning the song and figuring each other out in real time. And that's like, if you frame it that way, it makes for interesting listening. It's kind of like throwing somebody on skis at the top of a Moog hill and sitting at the bottom watching what happens. And
yeah.
Like, holy cow, they just skied it.
I think, you know, I agree, but I think these are all world-class skiers. So, you know, they have some chops and they have some ability to play with other people so that it's not, you know, these are world-class skiers, right? It's not like you're just putting a bunch of 13-year-olds up on the hill. These are pros.
That's right. And it's probably a team sport would be a better analogy.
I understand.
Like, it was almost like I was drafting for like a basketball team that I thought would have chemistry, right?
Right, and an all-star team.
So it was a good point guard. Yeah.
All right, enough with the sports analogies is not our thing, I don't think. So,
I don't even know what a point guard is.
You do have a tour coming up starting in February, mid-February. And it's a nice little tour through the East and then back home at Terrapin Crossroads. And, I mean, we could get into a whole conversation about what Terrapin Crossroads means for musicians in the Bay Area and specifically musicians of this kind of genre or makeup, I guess. But we've talked about that before, and if not with you, with others. It's just incredible to me, again, that you're on the road and, well, Elliot Peck shows up for a couple dates or Scott Law shows up or, you know, your friends from Strange Folk or from Assembly show up. I mean, these shows are each one going to be special in their own right, right?
Yeah, this is a different lineup, and it's again, I'm super psyched because Crosby has, you know, the violin in his back pocket, or whatever that thing is that he plays. It's like a violin.
Yes.
And then Scott's going to bring his mandolin. And then, you know, Elliot is, sings like a bird and just actually to have a female perform with a female, you know, is foreign to me. I've done it,
yes,
but not with regularity. And I'm looking forward to that because, you know, I've spent my musical career on stage with a bunch of hairy dudes and there's just, you know, there's a different energy. And so I'm psyched about that. I think it'll be, like you said, special and something fresh.
I'm excited to hear those harmonies with you and Elliot. That's what I'm excited for.
You know, I was talking about fear, like I'm a little intimidated. She's such a natural and she's so good at it.
Yeah.
I just I want to be able to support her in that way, and it's not as easy for me.
You'll get there, and if you don't, you'll have fun trying, right?
you sort of like sing quietly. It's like, you know, it's like doing the fake strum on your guitar when you lose.
Right. lose the spot. Oh, I don't think that's the case at all. I mean, everything I've heard from, you know, Strange Folk to Assembly to this stuff. Is this where you're at now? Is this where you're most comfortable now doing these, you know, Reed Genauer and folks type projects? Or, you know, are we looking towards, you know, another Assembly record or a Strange Folk record, since you're on pretty good terms with those guys at this point? Is that in the offing in the future, or is it just the solo stuff right now?
Absolutely. Oh. Yeah, no, absolutely. I have ongoing conversation. In fact, I was late for our call because I was talking to one of the guys from Strange Folk. So yeah, I'm not, I think people are always looking to read the tea leaves, and I could bore you with details, but they're mundane. And the truth of the matter, though, is, like I said, like, this thing kind of took on a life of its own, and it's fun to, if you have the opportunity, you know, to go to a different restaurant and taste different flavors and experience right. different people and different things. And so it's really rewarding, but it certainly doesn't preclude going back to the mothership.
What I find fascinating, aside from the amazing music that you put together with the incredible Rolodex of friends that you have, is that you're doing this full time, and yet this isn't necessarily what Reed does full time every day. I mean, you spend hours at this, but they're in off hours because you do have you have another job. So, like, are you tired? Like, or is this just because you're so inspired by what you're doing? It doesn't matter.
It's the latter. Yeah. I mean, I'm psycho. Yeah. I think it's, you know, my dad was staying with us recently, and he was kind of looking at the craziness of my wife, three kids and music and, you know, and my other endeavors. And he was like, you know, asking me the same question you just did. And I said to him, you know, why do lemmings run and jump off cliffs? it's just not going away. You know, it's just there. And so the trick for me has been over the years to be the master of it and not have it master me. And
right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but
yeah.
It's a challenge, right? Because it is drug-like for sure. And I just, you got one, whether you're, you know, whether you're doing 200 dates a year or 20, you just have to sort of figure out what it's the journey is the destination, you know, right. And where to, what needs oxygen, what part of your life needs oxygen, and be sure to give it to it.
Well, at the very least, you have merch to clothe your kids, and so that's good.
Yeah,
and
I love it when they go to school, you know, donning the supporting the cause.
and I think, and I could be wrong, but on Instagram, I think I saw one of your children may have a future in this, may enjoy singing and performing. Are your kids yeah. into it, and do you support them being into it?
Oh, totally. I just, you know, like, I haven't pushed it because they're so immersed in it. It's just they're band posters all over the garage. There's guitars all over the place. We have a piano in the living room, and it's just there for the taking. And I was kind of like had music crammed down my throat as a kid, and it's a small miracle that it took. Because unlike Jason Crosby, I just was not down with classical music. So I've let them sort of come to it, and they are. And it's neat. They all have, you know, we'll see how it manifests itself and how shiny and addictive it is for them. But they all have music in them. There's three boys. And if they want to do it, it's there. And my oldest son, you know, is just the most advanced because he's the oldest. And, you know, like, he gets frustrated with me. I'll teach him one of my tunes. And, you know, most of them are, what, four or five chords. And he's like, I got it. You know, like, shut up, Dad.
Yeah.
And, you know, he'll be asking me what the, you know, is it a major seventh. I'm like, it's these notes.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, it's a major seventh. I'm like, okay.
So you're learning. You're learning. That's great.
Kinda, yeah.
I love
and,
it.
I'm not pushing them, because I actually don't really push them on much at all, because I feel like they're bright kids. They're interested in lots of stuff, including sports, and with music, I'm a little, you know, it's a fickle lover, right? So I just don't want to, and they're already so biased towards it, right? Like,
right.
Like I said, they've grown up in it. They've all been to a concert before they were one.
Right.
So I proceed with caution, and it's brought me to my highest part to my life and my lowest. So that's, you know, it's a powerful instrument, or pardon the pun. And so I want them to do it in the way that they feel comfortable.
Now that this Conspire to Smile project sort of has a bow on it, can we expect new music from you, or from, I mean, we mentioned the others already, but is there new solo music coming? What can we expect down the road?
Yeah, I mean, that was part of the conversation I was just having. Definitely, I've got an arsenal of new tunes, and I've been kind of just given, you know, that I'm an adult. Yeah. It for me, like, writing comes and fits and starts, and it's about oxygen. As you know, a younger person, you just kind of did it whenever you felt like it, because I had time and energy and didn't have the responsibility. And for me, sometimes I have to artificially carve out time, but mainly it's just like how my life breathes. And yeah, I've got a whole bunch of new tunes, and I'm trying to figure out how to parse them and how best to bring them to life in all these different, with all the different possibilities. But that's, you know, it's a high class problem.
Yes. Thank you so much. I know many people have been smiling since hearing Conspire to Smile and attending your shows and really having a great time with the music. And we can't thank you enough for your support of what we do, but more importantly, the amazing stuff that you do. It's really awesome. And it's really great that we've become, I could be wrong, but I think we've become pretty good friends over the course of the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, absolutely, dude. You're a masterful communicator, and I've had so many good chuckles, often at my own expense.
Yes. Well, we'll leave that behind.
They're healthy exchanges. Yeah, absolutely, man. And same to you. Like, it's, you know, your passion shines through, and I'm on the sidelines cheering you on and watching, you know, just like you said, like, the same to you. I'm just like, wow, Derek Trucks. And
yeah.
On and on and on. And they're great to listen to. It's cool. It's cool. You ask, and I'd encourage you to do more, like, you ask really insightful questions. And
thank you.
I don't know, if anything, I find myself like, I could talk about any one of them for hours. So thanks.
Did that bring a tear to your eye? Reed has been an inspiration through his music, but now as a friend, he offers so much more. Solid dude who does it for the love of the game, much like I do. But seriously, consider these songs, the players, and the effort that goes into putting this kind of project together. What a guy. For more, visit reedjenauer.com. And please see him on the road. In fact, when you do, tell him Iris says hi. Before we leave you, have a listen to this outstanding performance of Midnight Moonlight featuring the great Melvin Seals.
Thank you.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.